Good morning. This is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. And today we're going to talk about running a player-friendly game. So I guess the first part would be knowing what kind of players you have.
Yeah, it's pretty important since you're running for players. I think there's all kinds of different types of people out there. So with that, there's all kinds of different type of players.
I think you can break down players into two groups. You got the active player, the one that's involved in everything.
Yeah, yeah.
They're engaged in the whole thinking process and everything. And then you got the player who's more like an audience member. They're there to be entertained and and they contribute when there's combat or they really want to say something or they can't contain their laughter.
So you like active and passive players, I guess we're talking about kind of, sort of?
Right.
Right. I guess it's easy to run a game for an active player because they're responding to your, to you, whatever you're giving them or whatever you're saying in the game. And they're taking an active part in playing the game.
Yes, they're actually there to role play and to enjoy all the aspects of the game. Whereas an audience member, you shouldn't think of them as not there to participate. It's just that, you know, some people have a harder time than others with the role playing aspect of role playing.
Yes. I've run a game where players were either extremely shy or extremely new, so they didn't know what to do theoretically. The one I was able to, in the Star Trek game, I was able to pull, literally kicking and screaming, to the role playing table, and she actually had fun. And then there was another woman who was just too shy, was willing to go along with whatever the group said. So she would always ask and put us to what her character should do and stuff. And I said, well, you don't have to ask him. Just do what you want to do is appropriate. But, you know, like you said, some people it's a little harder for different reasons.
So those were new players, but there's just the regular players. So you created your scenario and all the people have arrived and they've all done their characters. Hopefully they've given you their character sheets, because I think you always tell me one of the most important things is that you be able to read their character sheets to have an idea of what kind of character they want to play, because that helps to enhance the game, especially for the engaged player and even the non-engaged player, because you can have ideas to help them get engaged in the game, right?
I agree. Yeah, if you look at a person's character sheet, and even if they don't put any background, I mean, even at the very essential, if you look at what spells they picked, if they were a spellcaster, what skills they picked, you know, and things like that, then you know, you can kind of gauge what kind of game they want to play. If you see a wizard that has a lot of non-offensive spells, let's say, you know, like a lot of, what is it, phantasmal? No, I guess like illusions and stuff. Instead of fireball, instead of, you know, magic missile and stuff like that, he's there to obfuscate or to bedazzle other non-player characters or monsters. That's a different type of game. That's a different type of game that you run with a straight combat-oriented game, right?
Yes, because if they're not a battle mage, then, you know.
Yes, and we all know how Jolene likes her battle mages. She doesn't go into that hokey-pokey type.
I've tried charm person before.
And did it work?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's not as fun as throwing a fireball, though.
Yeah, blowing them to bits. Yes, I understand. So, yeah, I think she's right. I think Jolene is onto something here where you have an engaged or an active player and a passive player. And because they're totally two different, I wouldn't say animals, but different beasts, then, you know, you gotta play or you gotta run the game accordingly. Or at least understand that that's what's happening.
So when we talk about running a game, a player-friendly game, it means that you're trying to make sure all your players are having a good time. Because that's part of role-playing, right? That's the whole reason you're there. Otherwise, you'd be watching a baseball game or something that everybody wanted to do to be together and enjoy themselves, right?
That's true.
Everybody has gathered around your table, and you're trying to make sure that everybody has fun.
Right.
And I guess there's different kinds of GM styling, where some people don't necessarily... I've heard that some GMs don't care if their players are having fun.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, there's just as there is many different types of people, there's different types of GMing, right? There's rules lawyers GMs, there's the adversarial GM and all that other stuff. But if we're looking for being a good GM and presenting a player-friendly game, then you got to take all kinds of aspects of the different players that you have playing at your table. And I guess, you know, a grumpy GM or a GM doesn't care about that stuff. is not what we're aiming, you know, aiming this kind of conversation to. Though, if there is a grumpy GM or whatever type of GM that doesn't care about their players' fun, you know, maybe we can convince them, hey, it's better to run a game that everybody has fun in, at least try to run a game where everybody has fun.
So what are some of the things you can do to make the players enjoy the game more? Talked about spotlight for people.
Right. Of course. I mean, yeah, exactly. I don't know where I heard from this, but it's like all the rage, right? Every player should have a spotlight where, you know, if you have four different players, you know, sometime during the adventure, depending on or your game session, depending on how long that is, everybody gets the spotlight on, literally, like the actor, you know, spotlight, where they get to contribute to the game. You know, they're the one that's asking all the questions. They're the one that the GM is interacting with. And what you do is you just move that spotlight from one player to another. I don't know how you decide who to move it to, but basically you're sharing the spotlight with every player, so everybody gets a time to shine, right? To get to actively play in the game instead of just passively sit there. Because, you know, there might be some people who are really, really, you know, engaged and really excited to be there, and they may hog the spotlight, right? They want to, you know, they want to have the most time with the GM, and that leads to other players being maybe disengaged, becoming passive or too passive. Or, you know, want to go play a video game in the middle of your game.
Sometimes that happens. It also has to be what kind of week have they had, or what kind of day did they have?
Oh, that's true too.
Did their mom die, or did they have a really bad week at work? They got laid off or something. And then, you know, they may not be engaged in the game. They may just be sitting there so that they're with people they know, right?
But, you know, it's a good distraction, right? Playing a role-playing game, maybe. You know, that's why that's probably why they're still playing. But you're right. You know, you don't know what players' personal lives are going through. Or maybe you do. Or maybe you have an inkling. So that might help, you know, decide that maybe don't want as much spotlight as you want to spread around. But spreading the spotlight normally is a good thing, right?
What about group size? Does that change the way you do it?
I was just talking to you about that I run a D&D game currently that you're playing in, and our group size is 8. So let's say you give a spotlight to each player, that's 10 minutes. That's 80 minutes right there and then, and that's a long that's a long time. So usually spotlights in our group when we're playing is like there's two of you at the same time, right? A pair off of you go do something. And that to me, I think that's fine. I think that's a valid way of looking at spotlight or using a large. But I think using the spotlight in a large group.
It also has to do with the different kind of players. Because in our group, if you let someone have a spotlight for 10 minutes, they might not give it up.
Well, that's what I say. You got to actively, as a GM, actively try to move that spotlight around and not concentrate on one player, even though that person is giving you all kinds of good role playing and stuff like that. I think it's better always to move the spotlight around. And in my case, I have a large group, but I think, I make it work because the spotlight isn't on one person, it's on two or three even, right? The trio goes out and does something, and another trio go out and does something. So that's cool.
And it doesn't matter, because when it comes to combat, everybody feels like they're in the spotlight, right? Because each person gets to use their skills, right?
Yeah, but still, I think it's
intrinsically
more difficult to run a game with more players.
It causes more challenges.
Right. I mean, back in the day, back when I was a kid, literally, you know, 40 years ago, when I was playing D&D, there was a group of 8 players, and you know, but there was a different kind of game. Role playing, it wasn't as much as a role playing thing back then for us kids. It was, you know, we were murder hobos or fighting monsters, taking their stuff. The story was that there's a monster, go kill it, take their stuff. I mean, that was as much RP as we needed to be. You know, every once in a while, my brother would try to challenge us and do some weird role playing stuff. And as we got older, I think it became more and more easier or more fun for us to do that. But when we were kids, the group size were like 6 and 8, no problem. Now, some people say they don't want to run a game that's more than 4 people, you know, that real intimate setting. I don't know about that. I mean, I like having as much people in my group as I can, but you're right. There might be I think 6 might be pushing a good group size, especially if you don't know anybody or you don't know most of the people.
I think the next part that you want to talk about is, so you have... You created your scenario, you've gotten all your players together, and
right.
You use the basic hook, which usually you don't say you like, but it's if you're playing a D&D game, most people are in a town at a tavern. And someone comes in and offers them a job or gives them a problem to solve. And that's the basic hook, they call it, to get you started in the game.
The quest. The quest giver. Yes. They want the light above his head.
Yes.
In, like in the digital game. Yeah. You know, I don't use that. I don't think I even have ever used that when playing with you. The tavern, you know, the watering hole where a bunch of people, desperate, different type of people get together, the players, and then, you know, trust each other with their lives and go on this crazy hunt or whatever. But you're right. I mean, that's you know, I don't know if that's true anymore. I don't know if the tavern watering hole game concept, you know, start of the game campaign or game adventure is true. But it's such a...
Trope,
yeah. Well, what's another word for trope? Cliche, that I don't know if the people actually use it.
You know it's actually a topos, but we won't go there.
Oh, jeez. There she goes. Okay, so there you go. So, yeah, but however you start your game, right, you have, usually they have something to do. I mean, unless you're running open, what did I say? That open.
Collaborative.
The sandbox game, you know, then.
Well, it is a sandbox. But all games are sandbox or railroad, depending on how much you allow or let the players guide it a little
bit. Well, I hate to digress, but there was a podcast I'm listening to. They were discussing sandbox. And basically, the problem was that people had different definitions of what a sandbox was. So a sandbox to me is a game where the players can do anything they want, and the GM doesn't do anything. He might give them locations and stuff, but you don't. The GM doesn't like say, "Here's a guy who's going to give you a quest." So, but let's go back to the quest, right? So you get a quest. The players get there's a farmer out there who I think this is the version we were using, who seems to be having some problems out there. So you guys go investigate. And
but say your players don't want to go investigate.
Well, let's say they do go investigate a little bit, right? They'll do the effort. So they go out there.
Say the farmer comes up and to talk to them, and they all don't want to talk to
them. Maybe the farmer comes into the tavern, because like the players may not even want to go out there. So you push the farmer into this tavern, and he's looking for a stout group of men to get rid of whatever his problem is. And so he goes to your group, your table, wherever the group is, and says, "Oh, I'm a farmer out in the frontier, blah blah blah, and I've been having goblin problems." And so let's say your players are greedy, right? Well, you know, I'm down on my gold pieces. Of course, the farmer doesn't have a lot of money. Well, I could give you two chickens and a pig, and a bushel of corn, right? Players are gonna say, "Yeah, you don't want that crap." Your quest doesn't go off, and that adventure would lead to other adventures that you had in mind, you know, and
especially if they're first level characters. Yes. Usually you don't give them something too hard to do, because all the monsters will kill them if they're first level character.
So you're stuck, right? Your entrance into their adventuring world is gone. So what do you do?
Well, there's several things you can do. You could say, "Okay, so what are you going to do?
What, turn it back on them.
What is your plan for the day? Who's doing what?"
Right. And, you know, and that's okay. But that's, you know, then you have a meandering game that the players are like, "Oh, they're going to go shopping."
And then that's okay, though. Maybe they need that chance to get into the role-playing aspect of it.
Okay, that's true.
And like I always say, you should have your game planned out enough. You never know what the players are going to do, but you should have it planned out enough that you could bring encounters to them.
Right.
Or change you shouldn't be so inflexible that you can't change the encounter. And we talked about this, Saul and I, and when he says sometimes when I say that, he's thinking that I mean you're moving the mountain from one place on the map to another, but that's not exactly what I mean.
That's what I envision. Like, if you're going down the road and then they don't want to encounter something, so they go a different route. So you're talking, well, you just put the encounter in front of them. Well, what happens if your encounter is in ruins or something, or in the mountains? So you're just literally moving, Inception-like, a mountain into in front of them. But that's what I was envisioning, but that's not what you're talking about.
No, that's not what I meant. I was more talking about like how you say it. So they don't want to help the farmer. So they all go out of the, they decide they're going to go do something else, or they start to leave the city. And you said there's a woman screaming on the ground and you see a goblin running away carrying a bundle.
And she screams, my child, right? So let's say they're heartless people. They go, well, okay, they save the lady, or they at least get her back on her feet. They dust her off, and they're like, oh, the goblin took my child. And they're like, oh, wow, that's terrible. And they don't do anything. But most likely,
Throw all your dice down, yes, and stop playing the game.
But so you're right. So what Jolene is saying is engage them in a different way, right? Or tug something at their interest, right?
They may tug at their heartstrings.
Yeah, they don't care about a farmer's crops, but they might care about a person's life or a baby's life. That might be interesting. Though, you got some people out there who don't want kids involved in any kind of danger, blah, blah, blah. So they might, get a little bit.
I haven't met these people.
Yeah, well, neither have I. But I guess they exist. I don't know. So anyway, so you're right. So that's what I'm thinking, is that you change the hook. You change what you want them, how you get them engaged into the plot that you have, or you just have different alternate.
We heard this one GM talking about the fact that he always has extra cards with like little scenario things written on them. That's just it. to give your players something to get them into the role playing aspect, or maybe you have all these combats planned for your game, but they're just not doing combats right now. So let them go shopping and run into a wizard or whatever.
Well, he was talking about encounters, I think. So he has cards, and I think that's a fabulous idea, that you have different types of encounters. So sure, the goblin Warren is not going to get, the players aren't going to bite right now. So you have other things that they can do or hear about, So for, I was thinking, like, let's say a goblin Warren is what you set up, tunnels, they got to go in there and kick them out and whatever, deal with that problem.
I'm pretty sure they would just kill them.
Right. Yeah. You could negotiate, but yeah. Negotiate.
Negotiation skills for D&D players are usually to kill them. Does anybody else want to negotiate?
So you threw me off there. So they don't want to go after the goblin and your goblin Warren that you painstakingly mapped and have all kinds of things in there that would be cool and neat. It's not going to get used, right? So sorry.
At the moment.
Right. So they don't want to do that. So you're stuck if you don't plan ahead. So I would, in that case, let's say I'm starting this campaign or starting this adventure or this session, and your players don't bite for whatever reason. So you, as a good GM, you would have alternate things of places of interest, I would say. I wouldn't even say encounters. I would say places of interest. So I would have like a set of ruins that you go, well, what else is there around here? And then, well, you know about this place over here that has a set of ruins that is supposed to be haunted. Or there's an abandoned castle to the south that is supposed to, many, many treasure hunters have gone in there and some have come out with treasure, very little, but.
Or there's this mountain that may have some goblins in it, but there's lots of gold.
Well, no, and then a forest that has a magical beast that is rumored to run around in there. So what you're giving them options, right?
What kind of magical beast?
I don't know. You can make up anything you want. You're the GM. So you give these players these options, and then honestly, if they don't bite to any of those, then you just sit there and look at them and say, okay, so what are you guys going to do? I think you put a decent foot forward and try to engage them as possible. And if they don't bite on multiple things, then you just gotta maybe, I don't know, ask them what they want to do. I mean, they somebody might actually tell you, oh, I'd like to go over here to do something. Okay.
And so, if they don't tell you, then maybe you're playing with the wrong
people. Then you close up your books and put your dice away. Say, oh, yeah, okay. I'll see you guys later.
That was a great game.
No, but
for the most part, everybody who, especially a first level D&D game, they're going to go help the farmer. You're not going to have a problem engaging the players. That's what they're there for. Yeah. But sometimes there's certain things especially with seasoned players, and they see they want to be a little more, they don't want to go with the trope, or they don't want to do exactly what you want them to right away.
Yeah, people don't like, you know, nobody likes being manipulated, right? And then I guess if they feel that they're being manipulated, they may be, you know, hesitant or digging their heels against that. So
those are usually be people that you either know or people who are there to cause you problems. But because usually people playing a game, they know that right. You've created a scenario for them,
right.
Of something so. They need to do, right?
Right. You think so, but you know, I
but
don't
in
know.
The interest of making it a player friendly game, you want to make sure you have the players feel like and be engaged and taking part in the world that they're in.
Well,
right?
Like you said before, about look at the player character sheet. Some players might actually give you a backstory. Whoa, you know, they give you information. And I've said it before about players. If they give you some information, they just want, that's what they want to see in their game. So if you dig into, let's say out of 5 players, 2 give you a backstory, then mine that backstory. And then if you work with that backstory to make your adventure, then you're guaranteed somebody's going to be interested in it because they're going to be interested in what you did with that backstory of theirs. And if you integrate that into your adventure, they're going to want to know, oh yeah, that, you know, that has to do with my background. That has to do with what I'm interested in. So you got buy-in automatically, if that is even close to being a problem.
I think that's why a lot of GMs created this session zero that you're always talking about.
This session zero.
The time where...
that you don't believe in.
That I've never experienced and haven't really... I don't think there's, for me... Whatever the hook is, I'll bite on it. If we're going to go rescue a princess, okay.
Right.
If we need to solve a murder, okay. If there's a bunch of goblins, okay. I'm okay with that because I'm there to have fun. I'm the person that wants to go and fight things
and
save people.
You're willing to play.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think Session Zero, what it does is, so for those people who want realism, theoretically, in their role-playing game, people want to have a reason why they're together, right? Why is this battle mage hooking up with these couple of rogues that don't seem to have any connection
any
to
any moral
royalty.
Authority?
Well, there's that, but
there.
anything, and among other things, right? And so,
but that's the way life is, right? So
is it
you in life? You meet all kinds of different people, and. Those people become your friends and family, right?
Even though you don't like them? I mean,
yeah, like hello. Well, you don't necessarily have to like them.
Okay, like...
They grow on you after a while.
That adage is you don't pick your family, but you pick your friends, though, don't you?
Sometimes, but sometimes you inherit people or you get people that come with your brother's friends or...
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Know, things like that.
Don't get too personal, honey. They might listen to our podcast.
No, I'm not talking about any of our friends. I'm just saying that you meet people and they become... That's what happens, right?
I don't know.
But in the backstory is like, that's what the GM... It used to be the GM did all that. You would give them your character sheet and your... idea of what your backstory is, and then and like you always put, this is how you know this person, and you send an email saying you know so and so and you're together because,
right? I mean, I do that only because I thought that would be a good way to get the story going at the beginning, and I think that's what you need, a way to get the story going. But instead of me doing all the heavy lifting, right,
that's what the session zero
right.
is.
And so people automatically know, not automatically know, but they know who they're talking to when they say, oh, yeah, this is my uncle, blah, 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 whatever connections you're making.
But I've been there when you have done it a little bit differently, when you've said, okay, how do you know each other? How do you two know each other? And then you're sitting there.
That's session zero, kind
of. No, that's the beginning. It was the beginning of a game. And sometimes people look at you like they're a deer in headlights going, I have no freaking clue. Right?
Right, right.
So, like, or like...
That's the passive player.
Me and Augustine go, we're together. We've known each other all our lives. And then we just keep going until some action happens.
Augustine's our son, if you didn't know. But yes, so that is me trying to fake a session zero. But if session zero is like everybody around the table. We're making our characters. Make your connections. And that way, you know, you guys, the players, not you guys, the players themselves make those connections. And then, you know, one, it's a lot less work for the GM. And two,
it gives people the idea that they get to create their own.
It gives them a choice too, right? Like, let's say, like, for example, I made I made Steve's character, I forget, Machistas, who's a cleric, know Godric, his son.
He's a little thief.
A little street urchin. Know each other from the, just by their character. Because I was pairing characters together in the game by their backstory, by what they told me, their character class, and what they, and the backstory that they had given me. So I was pairing characters together, and I was left with a rogue, a child rogue, or a kid rogue, human, with a Machistas, who's a cleric of war. And I'm like, what the heck are these two do? So I asked them about their characters, and Alan, who's at the time was about 14, 2 years ago, 1 year ago. Anyway, 2 years
13.
Ago. It was 13. Anyway, so he goes, I don't know. I'm a kid who came from a different city, different part of the world. And basically he's a riffraff, or what do you call it? Street urchin, right?
Yeah.
And Machistas is a cleric of some god of war, but he's not from that area either. So I basically say, well, you know, you're doing outreach work, maybe, you know, I don't know what you're doing in the city. You tell me, but let's say you're proselytizing and stuff like that, and using some techniques that are in the real world. You give them food while you proselytize to them, and Machistas gets to know this street urchin who comes by for food every 2 days. A skinny little guy who looks pretty rough, and so that's what I did, as I paired those two guys together. But let's say they were not interested in that background I gave them, so it could backfire on you. But because my players are not really interested in making their own backstory, except for one, who wrote quite extensively on his backstory.
They were intricate backstory.
Very intricate. Yes, they were more than willing to go with what I wrote to them, because this was all happened in email, which I thought went out pretty well.
Yes, it did.
So
it was really cool too, because that's the way you want the players to engage. So if they know secrets about each other, or they know each other, and they know different things, then it gives them the idea that they're special, right? So that's part of being in the spotlight. So if you can start it at the very beginning of the game, that's going to make the game a lot more fun for them.
Totally true. I totally agree with that. I think if you have players who maybe not be engaged enough to do a session zero, you do this kind of a makeshift session zero on your own. It's a little bit work for me, but I didn't mind it, because I was trying to tell a good story, and I wanted you all to be on the road north out of the city, and for various reasons. And what's really fascinating is that it really worked really well, because certain people knew about other people's problems, but not everybody. But it was all interconnected, right? Not everybody knew. Some people, one group of people knew about this other person, but not this other person, but that person knew about them. So it was this really convoluted story I made. And then they're all on the road, out leaving the city, because for all different reasons, they needed to leave the city. And
that's, we were all on the run.
Yeah. In a run is one way or another, right? That's what, and it had to do with this pal's intrigue and stuff. And so,
oh, and that's one of the things is, but it gave everybody, that's one of the ideas to help to engage all of your players. So even if they are audience members, or someone who's not necessarily into, role playing all the time, or they're having a bad day or whatever, they're still sitting there and they know things and they're enjoying it.
Right.
And I think that's the most important thing to make it a player-friendly game, is to give each player the opportunity to have a piece of the spotlight, to do different things that they want to do.
Right. No, I totally agree. And so as a GM, you have to be kind of a counselor. I don't know what, to be able to pick up on, or empath. Not an empath.
Is that a D&D thing?
Empathetic to their players'
feelings,
right? And their moods, even, right? You got to be kind of, you got to be understanding that not everybody is going to be in the same mindset every time they come in, and so you got to pick up on their body language, their how they look, and how they feel. Jolene's very good at this. Sometimes I'm not, as a GM, I'm paying attention to other things. But like Jolene was noticing that one of our players didn't look right, and she goes, "Are you okay? And you have a, I have a headache, and then I have a migraine." And then he starts throwing up in the bathroom, and then
that was the end of that game.
That's the other game, yeah. So we talked about that before, but me as a GM, I wasn't able to pick up on that because I was busy running the game, and it was like in the middle of the game. But Jolene was able to pick up because he kept going to the bathroom.
Well, I was sitting next to him, and I could tell that he looked green. So
there you go. So that's what the, and I wasn't picking up on that. So yes, if you can have a little bit of empathy and be able to pick up those kind of things, that would greatly help your game. And then that would also help you
hook
the players and into what they want to do.
And yeah, and that's the most important thing. So say they don't want to do your first hook, and
right.
and you just look at them. I mean, Saul does this every once in a while. He'll go, "Okay, you've walked into this town. What are you doing?" And then some people are like, "What do you mean? What am I doing?" And then, but then other people are right off the bat, "I'm going to the magic shop to see if I can buy some potions."
Oh, they're
going to
go buy supplies.
I need to go to the blacksmith. I got these dragon scales. I want them to be made into armor. And
exactly.
And
exactly.
So everybody has their own thing they want to do. So I think he does that on purpose when you get into a town to give people the chance to actually role play with different members in the town.
And not only that, I'm not trying to lead the players by any means into some situation they don't want to be in. So if I open it up and they actively say do something, but let's say some player doesn't want to do anything, I go, "Okay, well, so all these other people, what are you going to do?" And they go, "Well, I don't know." "Okay, well, you're going to go to a tavern? Are you thirsty? You're going to take want a bath?" And so I'll do that kind of stuff, and that gives them, that pulls them into the game.
And if there's women playing in your party, the enticement after being on the road for 2, 4, 6 weeks, not having a bath, that is something that, the first thing you want to do when you go to a town where there is a bath is take a bath.
Take a bath. And
get it in.
Have a nice
sit
meal.
Down.
A nice meal.
Get off a horse. Eat. So no yes. trail rations.
So to run a good player-friendly game, understand your players, where they come from. Look at their character sheets. Look at the characters. That tells you what kind of game they want to play. Ask them, spotlight them, give them time in the spotlight, and be empathetic to their needs.
Allow them to participate, and allow them also to sit and watch if that's right. what they want. Try to engage them, but sometimes people aren't going to be engaged on that particular day.
I think that's what empathy rolls in. Right?
Yeah.
So I think that's it. Go out there and play some games. Be a good player and GM.
And remember, if you're the player, engage in the game. And
yes.
and if there's days you don't feel like it, try to engage in the game. Or
right,
you
try
know,
to put those things behind you and then just and
or give people a heads up.
And play the game because it's a good distraction to whatever.
And have fun.
Yes.
And that's the most important part of running a player-friendly game and playing in a game, is that everybody's having fun.
Right. I think that's what we're after. So this is Gaming Perspectives with Saul.
So this is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul. Okay, that's the third time's a charm.
So this is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. Have a great day.
Yeah, good day. Thank you.